This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Where you were born and where you become who you are aren't always the same thing. That's certainly been true for Gabe Moskov. Better known as Trackstar the DJ, Moskov has progressed from hip-hop fan to hip-hop tastemaker over decades. It started in his hometown of Madison, Wisconsin, but his move to STL for undergrad at WashU set the stage for where he, quote, grew up creatively. Today, Trackstar makes his home in St. Louis. It's also from here that he spins as DJ for Run the Jewels and hosts the Smoking Section on Sirius XM. Next weekend, he'll be hitting two stages at Maddie, formerly known as Music at the Intersection. And he joins us in the studio today. Track, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Track, you call St. Louis home.
Yep.
As we noted, you're originally from Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you grew up, right, as a
yeah,
kid,
yeah.
Fell in love with hip-hop. But how did you become a hip-hop head?
You know, I heard stuff growing up, and eventually I heard A Tribe Called Quest, which really kind of hooked me. And then once I heard Wu-Tang Clan, nothing else mattered to me.
Okay.
It really was the... Absorbing the Wu-Tang Clan just kind of turned me the corner where I was like, okay, I like music, but I like rap music,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I was always a sports guy up till then, and that's kind of what turned my focus from sports more towards my passion for music.
Oh, okay. I mean, was there a particular Wu-Tang song that got you hooked?
I mean, it was just Enter the 36 Chambers. I still remember the moment that I was walking down the street and pressed play on the cassette. And I just remember kind of walking, like, what world did I just enter? Like,
okay.
It's just a totally different, you know, universe. And my dad's from the Bronx. So I used to go to New York all the time as a kid.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like, retroactively, when I think about it, I feel like I had enough real-life imagery of New York in my head. So it was a little bit easier to picture the stories that they were painting, you know, on New York rap records.
And East Coast hip-hop was really your first love, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love stuff from all over. I mean, there's a lot of West Coast stuff I love, and, you know, certainly Southern stuff, you know, once I came to St. Louis and living in Atlanta, I developed, you know, more of an appreciation for. But yeah, East Coast stuff was my first love, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
So you loved East Coast hip-hop so much that your educational plan, trajectory,
mm-hmm.
you wanted to go to the East Coast.
Yep.
But you ended up here in St. Louis to
yep.
go to Washington University.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
I applied to a few schools on the East Coast. None of them let me in. And my mom had suggested I apply to this school I never heard of called Washington University in St. Louis. And I did. And they let me in and gave me enough money that I could afford to come here.
Yeah.
And so that's where I ended up.
What were your first impressions when you came to St. Louis as someone who was, you know, a hip-hop head?
Yeah. So funny enough, the summer before I came, after I decided to come, I was on this email list, and this is 1999, so this is early rap internet. But I was on this email listserv where I just said, hey, I'm about to move to St. Louis. I would love to learn, you know, I don't know anything about the scene there. Does anyone know anything about the scene there? Just so I can get an idea. And a guy on the email list happened to be the hip hop director at KWIR, which is WashU's radio station,
mm-hmm.
where I was about to head. So amazingly, it worked out. So the first building I set foot in on WashU's campus was the radio station, which just changed everything. Because I walked in there and I met Derek, and I just saw this wall of hip hop records, just the most hip hop records I'd ever seen in one place. And it was just everything I'd ever wanted to hear. And I said, wait, if I do a radio show, my key card will get me in this room 24 hours a day? I guess I'm going to do a radio show. And that's literally how I became a DJ. I mean, it's 100% because I was a fan of the music. I didn't want to be a DJ. I wasn't trying to be like a star or, you know, in charge of the party or, you know, all I wanted was to be around the music. And that was just the most, you know, the best path to get to all these records. So I could record them on a cassette and listen to them in my spare time. And
so yeah. on a cassette.
Yeah, cassette, you know, I mean, at that time, you know, just starting to burn stuff to CDs too,
mm-hmm.
but.
Do you remember what you know, one of the first, you know, mixtapes was that you made after you got access to all of those.
Oh, man. I can kind of picture, because there's one that I think I made two copies, one and sent to my buddy Tim from Wisconsin. I can't remember any details of it, but I have it somewhere. I don't throw anything away. I'm a hoarder or collector, depending on how kind you want to be.
Right, right. So those steps that you took then to become a DJ, you volunteered, I guess, for the station. How did that then help you to, you know, become ensconced in what was at that time St. Louis's hip hop scene?
Yeah. So, I mean, at first it was all on campus and I was just, you know, on the radio station and, you know, we would do local, you know, we would do shows, every, you know, twice a year through the radio station. And so my first exposures was the guy who had the radio show right before me was a guy, Mike 2600, hosted by Randy Brewer. And through them, I met Bits and Pieces, which is a legendary local group. Rest in peace to Cat. Jai's still around doing stuff. So I met them, and then a guy who eventually became my manager handed me a flyer for a rap battle in like 2002. Mm. And I went to it, ended up DJing at it, and that's where I met Tef Poe and Cash, who were at the time Honors English, who became my favorite rap group in St. Louis. And then eventually, somehow, pretty quickly, I became their DJ. Which I've just had such a charmed path through all this. Just stuff just happens for me. I get what I, you know, I get excited about something and then I get to be a part of it somehow over and over and over again.
So at what point did Gabe Moskoff become Trackstar the DJ? I mean, were you christened Trackstar by someone or did you?
No, I chose it myself and I actually remember. I can kind of picture the exact moment because I was in class, not paying attention as usual, and I was thinking about music instead. And I needed to come up with a DJ name because, you know, they put out the schedule and the poster and, you know, what's it going to be? And again, I never thought about being a DJ really before this. And in high school, Trackstar might be a little bit extra credit, but I was very good.
Okay.
You know, all conference honorable mention type
sure.
vibes, you know? You know, I wasn't winning state or anything. So I wasn't, Trackstar might be pushing it, but I was very good.
Okay.
And it just, the name hit me and I was just like, the double entendre is perfect.
Right.
And track was such a big part of my identity in high school, that yeah, it was just perfect. And I've been very happy with it ever since. And then, you know, through circumstances, I changed it from DJ Trackstar to Trackstar the DJ and, just to make it a little bit different.
Yeah.
Funny story behind that, but we don't need to.
Are you sure?
No, we don't need to.
Okay.
But yes, yeah, so it's just that's what it's been ever since, and you know, people seem to love the name, and it's a good conversation starter. People like, you know, did you really run track? And
yeah,
you know.
right. So you are known as Trackstar. Your professional rap fan resume is stacked. So if we go back to 2011, this is when you DJed for Killer Mike, became the official DJ for Run the Jewels a couple of years later in 2013. And since 2017, you've hosted the smoking section on Sirius XM's Shade 45, and you started your own apparel brand called Rap Fan in 2012. So you've done a lot here and across the nation.
Yep. I also have a hip hop swap meet that I do here that I've been doing for the last 4 years.
Oh, yes. We'd love to check that out.
A lot of endeavors.
You are doing a lot for hip hop culture in St. Louis. And yet, your debut production album was released just last year. It's called Killjoy.
Yep.
And it's by you and the hip hop artist, Damon, whom we've had in the studio, actually.
Yep. I remember that interview. It was great.
Let's hear one of the tracks from that album, Killjoy. This is All the Way Outside.
The real you is really all that you owe me. My state of mind is stop talking and show me. I can't abide my lies, sorry you phony. I could never wait inside and hide. Nah, you know me, if I stayed in the crib, they would think I died. I go in always, all the way outside. I go in always, all the way outside. I go in always, all the way outside. If I told you the truth, you would think I lied. I go in always, all the way outside. I go in always, all the way outside. I go in always, all the way outside. They say it takes a village to raise an artist. It took a villain to raise a child from the garbage. I was taught due to knowledge, but never made it to Harvard.
Almost a Morehouse man, majored in commerce. The product of the prodigal son, blazing the honor roll up. Something sparking in front of Page and Union. I use pages to unionize the rules of the human mind. We're only made to be broken, homie, I'm doing fine. Open your eyes, you can see it, the city is livid. All the anger that we feel is an energy and it saved me. I've been as committed, this is crazy in St. Louis, get it? We independently wave. If I stayed in the crib, they would think I died. I go eat.
And that was All the Way Outside by Damon and Trackstar the DJ from their 2025 album, Killjoy. That song. What led you finally to release a debut album?
I mean, I really owe it all to Damon. So I've been working with Damon for over 20 years. I mean, he was on, I think the first time we worked together, he was on $1 Mixtape Volume 4. So when I first started in the St. Louis hip hop scene, I started putting out mixtapes. And just a quick detour, I was like, why would someone want to buy my mixtape next to DJ Crucial and Charlie Chan and Needles and all these guys who were established? And I just had the thought to make it a $1 mixtape. And so I started selling mixtapes for only a dollar.
Okay.
And it, you know, I didn't make a lot of money, but I made a lot of headway into the world. Everyone had a copy of my CD, because why would you not buy it for only a dollar? So Dollar Mix Volume 4 was all local artists, all recorded exclusively for my project, 50 different rappers. And Damon was one of them. And we'd known each other, but that was the first time. And then we put out a mixtape in 07, and we put out a bunch of stuff since. But he was kind of the first person to I've been making beats for 25 years, just only me and my wife and my cat hear them.
Okay.
And he was just kind of the first person to, you know, ask to hear him and then say, give me that one and do something over it and then give me another one. And, you know, we liked the songs we were making and we decided to make it a group. And he's, you know, he's one of my best friends. He's been one of my best friends for a long time. So it was easy to work with him. And, you know, he was really encouraging and he kind of took the reins because I had a problem with starting beats and not finishing them and not knowing where I wanted to go with them. So he was, you know. Even though I'm the producer, I like to say, like, I made the beats, but he kind of produced the album as much as I did, just in terms of, you know, establishing a direction. And yeah, I mean, he's been amazing to work with. He's a great marketer, great, one of my favorite rappers ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, majored in commerce, he says in there. that's
funny, because I have a business school degree.
Oh, well, you know, making it work wherever it does.
That's
and
right.
I mean, selling a mixtape for a dollar,
yeah.
I mean, getting it out there and not making access a barrier.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a smart thing to do.
No, it worked. It worked wonder. You know, I thought it was smart when I thought of it, and it was smarter than I even thought it would be. It worked out amazingly.
So when you decided to release an album, I mean, was it obvious already that you would be doing it with St. Louis rappers? Regardless of where you happen to be, because St. Louis is not the only place that you've lived outside Wisconsin or Madison,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I left. So I came here for college in 99. I left in 09. We went San Diego, LA, Atlanta, LA, San Diego, St. Louis. We kind of retraced our steps exactly, which was all coincidence, but strange. But I always kept tabs on the hip hop scene here. I mean, I was still putting out mixtapes with Tef Poe and Rockwell Knuckles and, you know, my guys here through that whole time, Black Spade. There was no, even if I didn't make it specifically St. Louis focused, even if I made some sort of compilation album or something, there's no question that all those guys were going to be on it. And, you know, that's always been a focus of mine, you know, no matter what radio show I had, no matter what places I was playing, I was always incorporating St. Louis artists into it.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Trackstar the DJ. He's a member of the hip hop group Run the Jewels and a St. Louis based musician, producer, and Sirius XM radio show host. So you mentioned coming back to St. Louis, and it happened, from what I understand, it was like right at the beginning of the pandemic.
It was 3 weeks before the pandemic, so
and
we did not know what we were getting ourselves into.
And not necessarily planning to stay.
Yeah, we were planning on, you know, a couple years, but the idea was St. Louis for a couple of years and then back to Cali.
Well, one of the things that has happened is that you have expanded beyond, you know, your wife and your cat who are hearing your beats. You have a family, and you and your wife, Camilla, have a young daughter. How do you balance, you know, all of the endeavors that you're leading, that you're a part of? You know, do you get to bring your family on tour, for example?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always brought them, you know, as often as we can and as often as makes sense. And, you know, I mean, it's really hard. I always say I'm the luckiest person, you know, And I say, I've got my dream job and my dream family. And the only problem is my dream job makes it hard to fully appreciate my, you know, enjoy my dream family. Mm-hmm. And my dream family makes it hard to fully enjoy my dream job.
Yeah.
Because when I'm gone, I'm missing them. And, you know, it's tough, but, you know, I do my best to bring them out as often as I can. And you know, Amina's already been to more cities and places at 7 than I had been by the time I was, you know, 25 probably. Yeah.
That's enviable.
Yeah. I didn't have a passport till I was 30. She's mm-hmm. already been to multiple international locations.
Yeah. Now, Run the Jewels was a supporting act for Wu-Tang Clan's farewell tour
yep.
called Wu-Tang Forever, The Final Chamber. It was an historic tour because Wu-Tang Clan is one of the most influential hip-hop collectives ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that your daughter left her own lasting impression on that tour. And you know, for those who only know a little bit about Wu-Tang Clan, you should know that Wu-Tang Clan is for the children.
Famously.
Yes. So what did your baby girl do on this farewell tour?
Yeah. So, I mean, just going on this tour was the most amazing thing. Like I said earlier, Wu-Tang Clan, I always say Wu-Tang Clan is my favorite noun. You know, it's my favorite thing culturally. And so just getting to go on the tour was just unbelievable and getting to, you know, meet the guys and all that. And so when Camille and Amina came out to meet me in Phoenix at the Phoenix stop, they gave Camille a lanyard with the laminate, you know, backstage pass and all that. And they gave Amina just a wristband because uh-huh. she was going to be with us. So she didn't need the full credentials. You know, she's not going anywhere by herself. And they didn't want to risk her losing, you know, one of the laminates or something. Makes total sense.
Right,
but
but
she looks up at us and says, I don't want a bracelet. I want a necklace like you and mommy. And so we took her in the back and, traced the backstage pass, and I had Camille and I had her draw her own,
mm-hmm.
and I took a photocopy of it because I needed to keep the original, and I cut it out and put it on a lanyard, so she was wearing that around backstage, which was adorable. And then on the next they flew home, but on the next day off I went to Kinko's and spent $2.80 and made 40 of them laminated.
Oh my gosh.
And started handing them out backstage. So I don't think any of the Wu-Tang guys themselves were wearing them, but like half of Wu-Tang's backstage staff was wearing them. Our whole team was wearing them, and people just kept, you know, the Wu-Tang security guy kept texting me like, I need 3 more. People keep asking me for them.
Oh my gosh.
And it was, and that was already just the coolest thing ever. Right.
Yeah.
And, about 2 weeks before the end of tour, the tour manager comes up to me and she says, hey, for the last 3 shows, we wanted to switch up the design on the laminate because for, you know, for security issues, because mm-hmm. we had the same design and people could be duplicating it or whatever.
Right.
And she said, can we use your daughter's design? So I
oh, did you bring
I've
it?
I've got one here. So,
oh, that's awesome.
So this is what the original one looks like this.
Uh-huh.
And then we had her draw this one backstage.
Oh my goodness.
And then if you wanted to get into the final Wu-Tang Clan show ever in New York at Madison Square Garden backstage.
Oh, and it's red.
You had to show off. Uh-huh. Yeah, they did red ones and blue ones. But you had to show my daughter's artwork if you wanted yeah. to if you wanted to get backstage at Madison Square Garden that night.
So has that made it onto any of the merch? You know, it's like very colorful. One of them is red, the other
yeah.
one was
I've made shirts for us, but yeah, nothing official, but yeah, maybe I need to
okay.
expand that.
Well, and to provide a little bit of a history, Old Dirty Bastard at 1999's Grammy Awards stated Wu-Tang is for the children, and then it has just become this, you know, pop culture phenomenon.
Yep. He bum-rushed the stage. He wasn't even supposed to be on stage.
Even more memorable. So speaking of stages, track next weekend, you're going to be doing double duty mm-hmm. at Maddie. On Saturday, you're DJing for Killer Mike at the Big Top. But before and after that set, you're DJing at Sophie's Artist Lounge for a day-long set called Track Star and Friends.
Yep.
Who are those friends who will be joining you behind the ones and twos?
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, Maddie was kind enough to give me a stage and a budget to bring some friends in. And, you know, through all these travels I've had, one of the coolest things about my career, and I'm, you know, again, I'm the luckiest person, the stuff I've gotten to do is unbelievable, but one of the coolest things, I've gotten to become literal friends with a lot of my heroes, you know, at least acquaintances. And these are, you know, these are people I was a fan of before I even started DJing, people I looked up to just, you know, as artists, just as purely as a fan. And so, yeah, so they, I've got Prince Paul headlining, the producer for De La Soul's early records, Grave Diggers, Handsome Boy Modeling School, Prince Among Thieves, absolute hip hop legend. J-Rock from the Beat Junkies, who is one of the greatest DJs of all time. I mean, I just saw a video yesterday where A-Track was listing his top five DJs of all time, and J-Rock mm-hmm. was right in the middle there. And he's always been one of my favorites. House Shoes, who's from LA, but a Detroit legend.
Yes.
One of the early champions at J Dilla, and just an amazing guy, and a guy I've been friends with for 15 years. I had him out here at the Old Rock House a few years ago with Z-Trip also for another Trackstar and Friends show.
All these names you're dropping, like, I just want to sit at the stage and watch everybody.
Come on through. We'll be there for 8 hours. And then I got DJ Buck Rogers from Austin, who is a little bit lesser known name than the other out of town guys, but he's one of the most unbelievable DJs live, just one of the most talented guys. So he's a guy I just wanted to expose St. Louis to.
Mm-hmm.
He came with Scratch Bastard a couple years ago when I did a Trackstar and Friends.
Yeah.
And then I've got my amazing St. Louis lineup, which I didn't even realize I did this, but I kind of put together the Science, the old Blueberry Hill Friday night hip hop night that mm-hmm. was church for me for so many years. But I've got Radic Hi-Fi, formerly known as Chili C, James Biko, formerly known as DJ Needles, DJ Crucial, and Agile One, who were all four, they were four of the main residents at the Science for years. And, you know, these are people that I was, when I first started DJing, I was going and watching and learning from and absorbing their influences. And then I got DJ Cinnamon, who was one of the residents at the High Point with me many years ago. At the High Point Cafe, the legendary Monday night hip hop night, which was one of the most important parts of my life for many years. And then Superman DJ Speed, who is a newer friend. I didn't know him until relatively recently, but he's been doing an amazing job holding down the hip hop scene out here. And he ended up performing at the last Trackstar and Friends when someone dropped out. And he just did an amazing job, so I wanted to get him on here, too.
Mm-hmm. The last 15 seconds.
Yes.
What are you most excited about for Maddie?
Oh, man. I just love bringing top-flight, out-of-town DJ talent to St. Louis, because it doesn't happen enough in the hip-hop realm. And then also getting those DJs a chance to see the St. Louis DJs, because I've always said the St. Louis DJ scene is, you know, on par with a lot of, you know, we're just not known. Like, I always tell people, I'm like the 62nd best DJ here, like, you know. So I just love exposing all the talent we have here.
Trackstar the DJ is a member of the hip-hop group Run the Jewels and a St. Louis-based musician, producer, and Sirius XM radio show host. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. This is amazing.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.